Hello and welcome everyone. In today's show, episode 3, myself and Gregor are talking to Chrissy Lemaire. But firstly, let's catch up on what we've been up to this week. Gregor, what have you been up to this week?
Yes, so this has been week 4 in my new job. This week I took part in a governance workshop. I was talking about cost management and Azure Resource Graph. I've also been doing a bit of machine learning. There's a couple of customers interested in moving to do some machine learning in Azure. Also did a bit of Kubernetes debugging. Also did some planning, and we're planning to change the Azure Advent calendar this year. We're going to make it bigger and better, and it's going to have a format and a name change. So what about you, Richard? What have you been up to this week?
So this week I've been playing with a new feature in AKS called Start Stop Cluster. Sort of found a few issues which I've let the product team know about, and they're updating their documents. So that's quite cool. Basically, you can't stop and start a cluster which has got auto scaling enabled. There's a sort of an issue there. So that's cool. I was able to help out with that. I've got a nice little blog post up about that as well. Also managed to finish off my AZ304 study guide, which is up on the blog. The AZ303 and 304, which are the architect exams, have gone live this week, I think. So you can actually go sit the exams and get the results right away. You don't have to wait 3 months or whatever it was for the beta results. So that's cool. I should probably look at sitting them soon. Obviously, with MS Ignite, that's just happened. You were able to get a free voucher if you did the sort of learning. So I've managed to do one of those. So I'm just waiting for the voucher to come, and then I'll probably sit the 303. I think I might still actually have an exam voucher from the last Ignite. So I might do the 304 as well. We'll see. But apart from that, really, not that much. Just sort of blogging, learning more about AKS, because that's where everything's going. Obviously, talking with you about the Azure Advent Calendar, which is hopefully what we've got planned, should be really cool. Instead of just Advent, it's hopefully going all the way up to New Year. So keep an eye out, or an ear out, or anything out, for what we're going to do with that, because we're excited to get everyone involved, not just Azure.
Yeah,
Too excited.
Yeah. The one thing I did forget to mention is we announced the October Cloud Champion. So every month, the Cloud Family website has a community champion. So this month's October champion is Mark Duker. Mark's a serverless. He's a serverless developer. He lives in the Netherlands, and he's been helping me out with some durable functions. So that was a nice thing to do this month. So check that out. That's at cloudfamily.info. So yeah, forgot to mention that.
Yeah, so definitely join cloudfamily.info, and hopefully you enjoy the rest of this podcast.
So today we are joined by Chrissy Lemaire, a multiple book author, Twitch streamer, PowerShell and SQL heroine. Welcome to the show, Chrissy. How are you doing today, and how's your week been?
Hey, thanks so much for having me. I am good tonight.
Good, good. So give our listeners a lowdown. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, when it comes to my career, for I think like 22 years, I was working with SQL Server. And, but like even before then, I was really into scripting and always like to mix them together. So VBScript, and you know, like Tickle, like TCL back in the day. And in more recent years, I got really, really into PowerShell, and that kind of actually replaced my love of SQL Server. And, nowadays, starting in June, I actually transitioned to a new career field. So I am doing information security. I am an information system security officer, or an ISO. And the way that I was able to make that transition was by going through a job description and saying, I see an opportunity to automate this. I see an opportunity to automate this. And so, yeah, my use of PowerShell was really convincing for them. And so that's what I'm doing now. And I absolutely love it. I don't have to worry about downtime anymore. I don't have to worry about being on call. And I highly recommend InfoSec for anybody who's like really good and technical. I think that there's a lot of opportunity there, because we have a lot of people who are really great at the paperwork. But I think that there's opportunity for people who are really good at the technical aspects as well.
Yeah, sounds really cool. So how did you actually start about your IT career? What got you into IT SQL to start off with?
Back in the 80s, my parents had, we were that like the second family in the town to get a PC. And what was really cool is that my parents knew that it was the future somehow. And they encouraged all the kids to get involved. So I've been playing DOS games since at least 87. That was the first timestamp that I remembered. Whenever I saved my game, I was super into Infocom games like Zork and Wishbringer. Infocom games were really awesome because they had these little feelies. Like they would have a map. It was very kind of an interactive experience with their games. So you'd open it up and you'd have this map that you could take out. Or they had this like little stone that actually smelled pretty bad. It must have been made of like phosphorus. And my mom was like, "You're carrying that stone again, aren't you?" And I was like, "Yes." And it was my stinky little stone. And I got that from my little Wishbringer Feely box. So because we were encouraged to use computers early on, I wanted to be a hacker as early back as like 91. And I lived in America and I wanted to hack, but I didn't really have a number to dial into until 1994. I bought a Sarah McLachlan CD and on the back, it was like dial into our BBS. And I was like, oh, okay, this looks like an American number. And I had no idea. I was dialing internationally to Canada. I logged in. I stayed there for like 6 minutes and I think I probably paid like $60. And so that's when it all started. And then after that, it was, you know, the internet, super addictive. I was on IRC and I was meeting people from all around the world. And from there, actually, I had thought that I was going to get into something called X-ray technology. And that's what, you know, my guidance counselor was like, "You'd make a great X-ray tech." And I was like, okay. And then all my friends were like, "Just get into computers." But I felt that they were like reserved for computer scientists who were great at math. And I was never great at math. But after a while, I was convinced just because the curriculum was so much more fun. And, you know, I got into computers that way. And then I moved to California after being unhappy with my school and the state that I was in, and they weren't advanced enough. And that's really where my career took off. I applied for the first job. I got the first job that I applied for in California, in San Diego. I worked at an ISP and I would answer the phone. I'd be like, "Thank you for calling Simply Internet. This is Chrissy. How may I help you?" And I fix people's problems.
nice. That's awesome. So you're also a multiple book author. Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm a singular book author, unless I forgot one. It's very possible. But I do write for Manning. They are my favorite publishing company. And because I do have the toolkit that I wrote for the SQL Server community, DBA tools, I submitted a proposal to Manning since they were my favorite, and they came back and they said yes. So I'm writing that with Rob Sewell. He is one of the major contributors to DBA Tools. I think we have about 200 contributors to the project now, which is super cool and shocking since it's so niche. You know, not a lot of people are doing SQL Server and PowerShell. And so that's really cool. And yeah, we've been working on it for quite some time, and it's probably the hardest thing I've ever done. That is Learn DBA Tools and a Month of Lunches. So there's a popular series, Learn PowerShell in a Month of Lunches, Learn AWS in a Month of Lunches. And that's the series that it seemed most appropriate for us to write our book about, because there isn't really an all-encompassing beginner kind of beginning to end book that's available, or any books that are available for DBA tools currently. So that's what we proposed for.
So what's made it so difficult writing a book? Tell us about that experience.
It's torture. It's really hard. I think because it is such a long process, right? So you have like 26 chapters, and with with blog posts, you know, you write your blog post and then you put it out and then you get this immediate reward with it. And it's sort of an unrefined technical manual whenever you're writing a blog post. And it's the style of writing is different for books. So we have a development editor, which is really awesome. She helps us, like, while she's not super technical or maybe not even technical at all, but her questions are so amazing that maybe she is technical. It wouldn't surprise me. But she can really see, like, hey, you didn't mention Linux here. Why not? And then we'll have phone calls and then she'll ask me why. And then I'll start telling her and she's like, put that in the book. So it's a different style of writing where you write more about why and when than how, even though how is, of course, included in there. When you're writing blog posts, it's almost always how, and with a little bit of intro here and there. But yeah, it is a different way of writing, and it's so much writing. It's a chapter is like five blog posts, and it's just like ongoing. And you know, I get motivation in waves. And I wrote a ton in August, but I really haven't written a substantial amount since then because I jump into other things. I got into GitHub Actions, and that's occupying my entire brain. Or I get into like Nessus or Tenable.sc, and I don't want to think of anything else. I'm just really addicted to that. And so I think that it's just because it is such a long-term, continuous thing that makes it really challenging. But at the same time, it is super rewarding to know that, you know, whenever we get feedback, it is extra special feedback because you have worked so hard on it. And so it's really amazing to get positive feedback. And most of the time, I mean, really the only negative feedback that we've gotten is that the book is taking too long to write. But, you know, with COVID and the pandemic and all of this stuff piling on top of your everyday things that you have to worry about your life, then that does kind of slow things down. So, but you know, it's coming along and I'm really liking the progress.
That's cool. So you mentioned the feedback. Is that through the Manning sort of preview book stuff they do?
Yes.
Or something like that, is it?
Exactly. So they have the Manning Early Access Program, and you know, people can buy the book, and then they'll get a chapter every month or so. And yeah, so that's where all of the feedback is coming from. But in general, it's really awesome because you have the community helping you right along the way, you know, helping you catch typos that you wouldn't have caught before, or saying, hey, this isn't working on my Mac. How can I get it through there? And then we also get, they have a really interesting feedback program where, so you write and you send it to your development editor, and then they write back and then you respond to that. And then they send it to the technical editor. And then our first batch of MEEP chapters were sent to like 11 community members with very detailed questions, and including things like, you know, if this was on Amazon, what would you rate it? And if not a five, what could get it to be a five? So you really get to see what people are looking for, and you get to have that quality throughout the entire writing process.
That's cool.
It's very high quality. That's what I really like about it. Yeah, it's intense. And I did hear that they are the most stringent publishing company, and I found that very appealing, even though it is hard. I really like that. I believe they are going to help me put out the best book possible for DBA tools.
Yeah, definitely. Sounds like it. So I was also doing a bit of sort of Twitter stalking, and I noticed on your feed, you've got quite a bit about the Real Cajun Thanksgiving Cookbook.
What is
it? And tell us a bit more about it.
Okay, well, tell me as Scottish people, what you know about Cajuns.
Not a lot,
nothing.
To be honest.
Nothing. So that's usually the case. So except for, I think it's a very American-centric thing. So the Cajuns, we are a culture of people in Southwest Louisiana. That's why you see, like, it's my last name is Lemaire. It's French. So the French went to Canada, and they're like Roman Catholics. And then they got kicked out by the British in 1755. And the British were like, hey, you need to, I think this is the story, you need to fight or become Protestant. And they're like, we don't want to do either of them, so we're going to leave. So they left, and they settled, you know, in Boston, just a little bit here and there in Maine. And then they went around Florida, came up to Louisiana, and mostly settled there. And so we are, it's pretty cool that we have our own language, which is super old French. It's close to the Quebecois, but it's the French that was spoken in France in like the 1400s. And we have our own distinctive style of food. We have our own flag. We have our own way of speaking. As a matter of fact, my English, the way that it's structured, is very influenced by French structure. So we'll say things like, oh, I'm hungry, me. So you have that reflexive pronoun at the end, the comma me. And I had to kind of clean that up out of my vocabulary. Whenever I moved to California, people weren't recognizing words that I was saying. I'm like, oh, I stepped on a pecan. And they're like, oh, what? And I'm like, a pecan? And they're like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And so, yeah, we're primarily known for our cooking in America, but a lot of other countries think that we are a seasoning. Mm-hmm. So there's Cajun seasoning, right? Which is So in other countries, Cajun seasoning is usually pretty gross. It's just like cayenne pepper or like just a bunch of paprika. And then people put it on, it's way too hot and they're sweating. And that's not really what we see our food as. We see it as highly seasoned, but not like super spicy. But of course, if you think that like ketchup is spicy, then you're going to think that our seasoning is spicy. But yeah, so what I have there is it's our home cooked meals. It's the stuff that we make at home. It's the stuff that we make in restaurants. And in 2002, I started a website called realcajunrecipes.com because I moved to California and every place that I was finding was just horrible. And I was like, man, we're being so misrepresented. And so my best friend and I created Real Cajun Recipes to kind of clarify what is a real Cajun recipe, not a fake Cajun recipe, not just some, you know, red like paprika, cayenne kind of chicken. And we put that and we compiled it onto the website with the help of our hometown. We have over 1,500 recipes, and we actually had to hoof it to our neighbor's house and be like, hey, Ms. Burt, how you make your gumbo? And then she would tell us and transcribe that. And then we put it on the website. So yeah, it's really like a hometown kind of project. And recently we did make it into ebooks, which was super complicated and fun, but gorgeous. And then we have physical books as well on Amazon too.
Amazing. Yeah, well, that's really cool. So let's talk a little bit about some DevOps stuff. So you recently spoke at the Dutch DevOps and GitHub community.
I did.
Yeah, you were talking about introducing the GitHub CLI. Tell us a little bit about the GitHub CLI then.
So the GitHub CLI, it was just released. It came out 1.0. It was in beta for a while. And I usually don't really mess around with beta software because I don't have time for the bugs. And I just don't want to like help people create features. I just want those nice refined features and work with them. So whenever 1.0 came out, I downloaded it. I was super excited because I thought that it was going to be a total replacement for Git, the command line thing. And because for me, Git it's a very 90s kind of command line, right? It doesn't really embrace the user. It doesn't try to make things easy. And what I love about PowerShell development is that we're really encouraged to make things easy for others. So that's something that I'm used to now. And when I use Git, I'm just like, oh God. So I actually use GitHub Desktop, the GUI, even though I create CLIs. I use the GUI to interact with GitHub because I don't have time for like that just unrefined, unpolished thing. So I was really excited when 1.0 for the GitHub CLI came out, but it's actually not a replacement for Git. It is, let me check my notes. Okay, here we go. It is designed to be a complement to the Git command line, where Git does the Git stuff and the GitHub CLI can do the common GitHub stuff that developers want to do from the command line. So branching, so branches, commit, push, pull, etc., all from, so all of that is from the Git command. And then your pull requests, your issues, your releases, things that are very GitHub-y, that's done with the GitHub CLI. And I think that the two coolest things about it, it's interactive, right? So whenever I was talking about Wishbringer and Zork and playing those whenever I was younger, this GitHub command line reminds me of that, because it has like, if your repo has any little emojis, then, you know, the emojis are there. If you create, if you log in, it prompts you. So it really holds your hand along the way. It'll even bring up, like, if you want to edit a file, sorry, if you want to like edit an issue, it'll bring up Notepad, and then you can edit in Notepad, close it out, and then it takes that and it submits it to GitHub.com or GitHub Enterprise Server. So it has that. It's so user-friendly in that way. And the name of my session was, it's the interactive CLI for people who love GUIs, because it does implement a lot of the pros of GUIs. Like, it'll take a really complex scenario and make it into just one little command line. And it does allow you to interact super easily with the API. And I think that's really where it's going to shine.
Sounds like it could be quite a cool tool for the IT pro trying to get into the GitOps kind of stuff as well.
Yes. Yeah, totally. It just makes it so much easier.
Nice. So talking about GitHub, let's move on to like Azure DevOps. I believe you did a podcast with Jeffrey Palermo or something like that.
Talking about Palermo. DevOps.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how was that?
It was fun. I did tell him, I was like, Jeffrey, I don't really do DevOps at work. Is that okay? I'm not actually familiar with Azure DevOps, because I was always told you had to have about 2 weeks solid of just kind of pounding your head and, you know, just kind of slamming your YAML pipelines and getting it to work. And I knew that that was always going to be on the back burner, and I was really excited. I got into GitHub Actions, and I heard that they are super similar to Azure DevOps YAML pipelines. So I do know the GitHub Actions pretty intimately. I created one myself that does caching of PowerShell modules from the PowerShell gallery, so that you don't have to keep downloading your modules over and over again. But as far as Azure DevOps goes, I don't know too much. I play in the cloud, but I really don't have any projects that are production in the cloud. It does help me write better code though.
Nice.
Sounds good. So mm-hmm. you mentioned DBA tools earlier on. I see you've got 1400 stars on GitHub. Tell us a little bit more about DBA tools.
So DBA tools is a SQL PowerShell module. So it's a PowerShell module that wraps itself around Microsoft's SMO, which are SQL Management Objects. So really beautiful and fun way to program. But I am a PowerShell developer, so I enjoy that, right? The beauty of DBA tools is that I, as a developer, do all of this and with 200 other people, right? And we create these tools that are, as it, for end users, super simple to use. And it first started in 2014. I was assigned the task to migrate a SQL Server instance, the whole thing, right? Your databases, your logins with your passwords, your roles, your agent jobs, every single thing. And I was like, oh, this is, I hate to be bored. And I was like, God, migrations are so boring because they're so tedious. And I was like, you know, somebody had to write this in PowerShell already. So I went and I looked around the web, but all of the examples were static, right? So it was like, I'm not going to type out /msql, you know, file.mdb or MDF. And And so what I did was I wrote kind of that magic that PowerShell is known to deliver. Good PowerShell is known to deliver, where it just figures it out, right? Our philosophy is I want to supply as many defaults as possible so that people don't have to keep typing and typing and typing and typing. It figures out and it makes most of the assumptions for you, but then you're also offered the option to override those parameters. And so over the course of time, it got to be really popular. And we just had a tweet that this one guy, can we cuss on here? Just very mild cussing. He said, how the shit did I do my job without DBA tools before? And that just cracked me up because it was one of the most rewarding tweets ever that you've, you know, created a tool that now people find impossible to work without. So yeah, it really does a lot of the heavy lifting. If you want to decrypt like just a ton of objects, that's really where PowerShell shines, is that it could just do a ton of stuff all at once. And you can decrypt an entire database if you want, you know, if you're working with something where somebody encrypts every single one of the stored procedures and I think views can be encrypted as well. But that was something that I was dealing with. And I executed one command created by this guy in the Netherlands named Sander Staad. And I executed that against my database. And I was just like, oh my God, that would have taken forever. If I, you know, during the old days, the pre-DBA tools days, and now it's simple, it's fast, it's straightforward, and it's a lot of fun to develop because we have a Slack channel. It's on the SQL community Slack. I think there's like 14,000 people there, and there's probably 3,000 in DBA tools channel, but all of the developers get together and we talk about best practices and we have, you know, spirited conversations about build versions and, you know, if we should include ones that are retracted. So you're just surrounded by a whole bunch of friends who love the same thing that you do. It's like just a bunch of kindred spirits, people who love PowerShell, people who love SQL Server. And it's just a really fun, wonderful project to work on.
Sounds good. So we're in October now, which means Hacktoberfest. I'm guessing that's going to make your repo a lot busier with people trying to contribute to it, or does it normally sort of miss the Hacktoberfest?
We do get a couple. It's not overwhelming, and in the past years, it hasn't been spammy. I know that there was a problem that came up with one developer advocating for, you know, dumb small changes, or non-meaningful small changes. And we usually don't get that. We usually don't get overwhelmed, but we do get participation. And in the past years, we've actually come together as the core group of developers and kind of challenged each other to go through and, you know, we do bug bashing and stuff like that. But this month, I'm kind of obsessed with my new project. So I won't be initiating the bug bash, and I'm unsure if anybody else is planning to as well.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about Twitch, because I'm a big Twitch fan. So you're a Twitch live code streamer. I love the name, Potato Quality. I absolutely love the name. Is that anything to do with your cat, or where does that name come from?
So in Louisiana, we have, so the word, the French word petite means small, and people call each other T-A-T, what's up? And so I was looking for a new name because actually my wife gave me the hacker name. She's really good at hacker names. And I was like, man, what's my handle? And she said, I think you should be Control B because you're bold. And I was like, oh, shit, that's perfect, right? So I went to GitHub and I was like, GitHub/CTRLB. And it was taken. And then so I was like, CTRLBOLD. And I was like, but I look like Control Old and So that didn't work. And I had forgotten that there could be CTRLBEE. That could have been cute, right? Because that could have been like a little bee emoji. Yeah. So I was just like, shit, I don't know. And then I was looking around trying to think of a name. Look to the side. I have a cat named Potato because he's kind of dumb. And he has like a little round head. And I was like, Potato. And I was like, Quality. You know, the whole Reddit thing about how potato quality is like just real bad quality. You know, I wanted to make it a little bit French, so I put that little TEE on the end, and that's how we got Potato Quality. So that was my GitHub username. So basically on Twitter, I'm at CL, and I try to get at CL. If I can't get that, then I'm going to go for Potato Quality EE. Thank you. Glad y'all like it.
So when you're on Twitch, what kind of stuff, apart from the live coders, do you do anything else on Twitch or?
I really have like, I go through phases of when I'm on and when I'm not. I actually live stream writing my book a lot because I want to give people that insight into the torture of what it's like to write a book. And just how, like, somebody was like, man, I was watching it and I realized just how hard that is. Cause I was trying to put myself in your position and trying to come up with the outline or responding to your development editor's statement, like why here or whatever. So I give them insight into that. And then while I'm at it, I'll just throw in a little lanyap. I'll throw in a little side project. I'll rewrite an old PowerShell module that I wrote back in 2014 and how I'd write it different and better today. I think in an upcoming one, probably tomorrow, there's a VMware script out there. I don't know if y'all are super into on-prem VMware vCenter stuff. But I didn't think so. Probably not. I have a home lab because I'm a SQL Server DBA. And if you want, you know, 27 different versions of SQL Server, that is extraordinarily expensive in the cloud. So I just have a beefed up, nice little, very super quiet home lab at home. And I run ESX. And there's a community member that put out a PowerShell script that downloads stuff and like upgrades. I forgot what part I needed for. Oh yeah, I think that it compiles little ISOs for you to do it. And so I saw his PowerShell script and I thought that it would be really fun to rewrite and show everyone. Cause it's that original script style, right? Where at the top you write, version equals and whatever equals, and you just assign your variables, and that could be made into a function where the person executes a command and then passes parameters that way. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to make it into a PowerShell module for him and follow best practices and do that on stream and then give it back to him. So this is the kind of stuff that I do. I do some PowerShell live coding. I was just my last one was about GitHub Actions, which I'm obsessed with right now. That mixed in PowerShell as well. So it's mostly a PowerShell and tech book writing stream.
Nice. I'm going to have to catch one of the book writing ones just to see how painful it really is.
Yeah.
I'll send you the YouTube link.
Awesome.
Yep. That sounds good. Good. So what's your favorite conference, the ones you've ever attended?
I love, in particular, so I really come from like two separate camps, right? PowerShell side and SQL Server side. I really love Data Grillin, which is put on in, I love so many. I just love them all. Data Grillin is Lingen, Germany. We get beer as we present. It's just so awesome that it's all of our friends, like all of our friends come from all these European countries and some come from America, and we come together. So you get beer. And then at the end of the day, you know, whenever you're starving, you're famished and you have that like post-presentation crash and you starve and are sleepy, and they will do the biggest barbecue ever and feed everyone for free. And it's the attendees and it's the speakers, it's the organizers, everybody together is eating some grilled meat. And so that's one of my favorite ones. Another one that I love is Data Scotland. I am absolutely obsessed with Scotland. I love Glasgow. I love every band that sounds Scottish. I love Paolo Nutini. I love, I think it's the Daikinis might be from there, and the Cortiners. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love Scotland. And I was just talking to my wife recently, and I was like, if Scotland joins the EU, I think that we would totally retire there. Data Scotland is in Glasgow. It was the last time that I went. Put on by the nicest people. I was in Glasgow and just walking down the street, and somebody was like, hello, good morning. And I was like, oh my God, for real? Like I hadn't been, people hadn't been that nice to me in years. And the sun was shining. It was a beautiful day. The food was amazing. And I was like, I just want to live here forever. And so I love Data Scotland. That one's a lot of fun. And it has a very similar free-spirited vibe to Data Grillin. And also Sequel Bits is really incredible. That one is one of the larger ones. It's usually held in like London or Manchester. And I was able to, it's cool because it gives you a destination to go to, right? So I discovered that I absolutely love Manchester too. And the organizers are awesome. And something I'd like to highlight that I really do love about that conference is that as a speaker that's a woman, they give women sizes, because unisex is total bullshit. And it just like, it doesn't fit anybody, right? It doesn't fit men. It doesn't fit women. And like, you just, if you're a woman, you have a specific shape. And so I really like that they give t-shirts to speakers that are women's and women's sizes. So it makes me feel more welcome, you know, whenever there's intent that way. And then on the PowerShell side, I actually haven't been to any PowerShell conferences in America, but the one that I have been to here is PSConf EU, and that one's really cool because I get to hang out with all of my friends there too.
Nice. So have you ever spoken at an event where you've not felt welcome, or have you ever experienced anything bad that us as a community could actually try and help fix?
Yeah. So actually at PSConf EU, there's this PowerShell MVP, Jeff Wouters. And I walked into the speaker room and somebody was like, hey, Chrissy, how are you? And then Jeff said to the effect of, what is it? Why are you being nice to her? Is it National Secretary's Day?
Not good. Not good at
all. And it was like, and it's so hard whenever you're in that position, right? Because what I wanted to do was lose my shit on him and yell and be like, you know, just be like really vulgar, because that's like, it's an attack that's so unnecessary. And to me, it comes from just a place of insecurity. But if I counterattack, then I come across as the crazy one, right? And then if I complain about it, then, you know, there they are, like complaining about, you know, just some joke again. And so what I did that day was, I thought through it, and I said, hey, that's going to be the last time that you ever talk to me that way. And then I walked out and I blocked him everywhere. And that was really the worst one, because after that, you know, whenever I think of PSConf EU, that's what I remember, because it was so devastating to be humiliated in that way in front of many of my colleagues, because the speaker room was packed, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, sometimes it totally sucks. So that feeling of being welcome is especially important. And I get that at Data Grillin, and I get that at Data Scotland, and I get that at Bits as well.
Cool. So do you have any sort of advice to new female speakers out there, you know, from your experience, to try and help encourage more female speakers and stuff?
I do have some advice for the guys. So
cool.
So whenever I get any sort of invite that's like, hey, we need more women speakers, I'm just like, no. Like, that's not what, because they're not going to reach out and be like, hey, we need some more dude speakers, hey, bruh. Like, you know, what I like is, hey, Chrissy, I've looked at your work. I see DBA tools. You know, I see your PowerShell skills. I see that you're a community leader. I would like you to speak. And just leave out that if you're trying to hit a quota or whatever, that's like really nice. But and it's important. But like, just don't make that the reason why you're asking me. And as for the women in tech, I actually did a podcast with Dan Jones. He is like this PowerShell guy. And I did a podcast with him where I was talking to somebody else about this. I'm like, I wish I had my notes here, because I did come up with a bunch of stuff. But it's basically, for me, I never paid attention to it. But it's also hard and it's tiring, because on one hand, you can try to ignore all of it. And on the other hand, you just kind of get tired of everything. But for me, I don't tend to care what other people think of me. And like, I'm always just trying, like my definition of success is, would little me be super pumped? Right. So that's if awesome. I'm like, hey, Chrissy, you wrote a book, and I'd be like, yes. And it's like, hey, Chrissy, you wrote some open source software that people love. Holy shit. You know? And so that's kind of where I come from, that like, you know, you do have challenges, but nobody is going to make me stop doing what I love. I'm doing it all for the joy that I get. But at the same time, I do empathize with people who are just like, I've had it, because it can get, you know, it's just over and over again. And just like, oh God, you know. So, and then just give yourself free time to recharge, give yourself time to recharge and surround yourself by people who are encouraging. Cause there's people like, you know, William Durkin and Ben, the people who run Data Grillin, like hanging out with them, whenever they make it a point to be inclusive is very recharging. Ben Wiseman, I think is his last name.
Awesome. Some very wise words there. I love how you were sort of, little you know, child you, what you think. It's awesome. I'm gonna have to use that myself, because that's really awesome. Cool.
Yeah, it helps. Oh, the other thing is, this is just in general for people who encounter imposter syndrome. I know a lot of my friends do, and I used to, and then I realized in talking to my friends who are fellow automators, as SQL Server DBAs, I think a lot of times people are like, oh, you're great at performance, and I'm not. I suck at performance, right? Like, I can Google it like other people. But as a 22-year DBA, I could have spent more time doing performance enhancements or whatever they're called. Performance tuning, that's what it is, not drugs. Performance tuning. But I never got into it. And then I'm talking to other automators and they're like, I hate performance tuning too. And I was like, oh my God, what if the people who are into automation are into it to the exclusion of that love for performance tuning. And then I was like, I don't have to know that, because what I'm good at is this. And so I focus on my preference is automation, and that's what I'm good at. And anything else, I could get good at it if I wanted to invest the time, but I'm not, and I accept that. And I have friends who are good at it, and then I reach out to them, and when I need performance tuning help, or I Google what I need, if it's in a pinch. And so for anybody, you know, who is encountering imposter syndrome, just kind of look at it that way and accept what it is that you love, accept your preferences, and don't care about the rest.
Chrissy, you're very well known in the SQL and PowerShell community. Mm-hmm. If you could pick someone that you know who isn't kind of so well known and would be amazing to get on a podcast, who do you think you would choose and why?
I would actually pick this girl, Melissa Jones. She was the person who asked, who I interviewed with on Don Jones's podcast. So he links up community members with other community members that could potentially solve their problem. And what I really love about Melissa is that she's super motivated, and she's a fellow automator. And she was also like, oh my God, like I also don't love performance tuning. This is me. and it sounds like I think that she is into the more advanced stuff with CI, CD, you know, and I think that she would be the one that I would pick.
Nice. Awesome. She sounds, I do like a bit of CI, CD myself, so it'd be good to see some of that in sort of SQL and automation. And that
stuff. Well, if you go to dbatools.io/tests, you can see our pester tests. We do have CI, CD automation within our DBA tools tool set. I don't do it at work, but I do it in my projects. Cool. So I'm there with you. I love it. It helps me sleep better at night. I love tests. You write them once, you never have to worry about that again. I actually start out every single project with tests, integration tests, because those ones are super boring. But I don't like unit tests. It's too theoretical. But with those, like, you know, you get that excitement, and you get that every single time you commit that it'll run all your tests. So.
Nice. Yeah, I think integration testing is definitely more fun than unit tests myself. Getting to build the infrastructure and tear it all down at the end.
So fun, right? Yeah, mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah, I started on a security project with this vulnerability scanner called Nessus. And I cannot believe how cool it is that I could get a Nessus Docker container. It takes 11 seconds to download, like 8 seconds to start running. I apply the license. I apply all the certificate authority stuff. Put all my plugins and then test against that. And then it's gone. And I'm so impressed by that. It's so much fun.
Yeah, definitely. I use Tenable.io quite a bit.
Oh, do you? Cool. Yeah, so
Nessus, and that is so cool. Definitely very helpful for us IT pros to keep everything secure.
Totally.
Yeah. So I think that's pretty much all we've got time for today. So thank you very much for coming on and talking to us about DB tools and everything else. It's been, well, I've learned a hell of a lot about you and about what you're doing in the community. And now I got a cookbook I need to go look at.
Awesome.
In America.
The Thanksgiving cookbook, by the way, is particularly special because the ebook version, because we included audio clips from Cajuns talking about food. So you get to hear that some real, real thick accents, not as thick as yours, but you get to hear some real thick accents and how my friends back home are, you know, how they talk.
Definitely looking forward to listening to that.
Sweet.
Thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me.